Hey everybody, just a heads up, today's episode of How Did This Get Made covers a film that is a sexual erotic thriller. In that thriller, there are plot points involving graphic sex, incest, and rape, which we do discuss. So just wanted to give you a heads up before you started listening. Bondage, high altitude, and CD-ROMs. We saw Killing Me Softly, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I'm your host, Tall John Shear, and today's film is Killing Me Softly, released in 2002 with the tagline, how can you escape what you can't resist? It's like 25 Shades of Grey, because while being a hardcore softcore, it also is a thriller with a mystery that I would argue you could never figure out. But to break it all down, I have my two co-hosts. Please welcome Jason Mantzoukas and June Diane Raphael. How are you both?
Well, you know, this was a wild ride. I did not, to your point, like reveals happened that I didn't know needed to be revealed. And I was flummoxed by quite a bit of this movie, but boy, we don't make erotic thrillers anymore. It doesn't exist. It's a genre that's gone away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do like an erotic thriller as they go, but this was, there just were no answers.
No answers, and actually quite few questions. For the first hour of the movie, I kept writing in my notes, what am I supposed to be watching? What am I supposed to be latching onto? What is the story?
I think, there's so many questions. I guess let's just start at the beginning, because that first shot of those people falling off the mountain.
Oh my God.
They're trying to set
a serious tone. Like, the movie opens with this voiceover where you're hearing about this dramatic climb and you see everyone climbing.
People are ice climbing, like the style of like the documentary this year, The Alpinist, with axes and crampons and, in on a mountainside,
And it looks to me to feel like this is a movie about climbing. Okay, this is going to be like a K2 kind of film.
That's immediately what I thought as well.
Then all of a sudden, there's an accident. People start to slip. And the way they fall off this mountain is like, the only way I could describe it is it looked like what they used to do on The Man Show when people were jumping up and down on trampolines. Yeah. It was so like they were flying off into the air as if they were thrown by like a WWE wrestler, just like, whoa.
Well, it's like they're attached to the mountain by ropes and harnesses and, they're drilling into the ice and they're attached. And then, it's unclear whether an avalanche, and then later we learn it's equipment failure on purpose. But they fall in a way, to Paul's point, not like people would fall just straight down the mountain, hitting the mountainside as they go. They fall as if they are rocketed out into midair. And then later in the movie, when they show the actual fall, and it's just three dummies falling through space, and that fall lasts for, 3.5 minutes?
It's a long fall.
The film, I feel like the film was like, we need more time. We'll just show the dummies falling longer.
I mean, the movie is just squeaking in at the 90-minute mark. And I will say that they don't even trust the audience, because, June, before even you get to that climbing, you're seeing these picturesque, mountains, and you're hearing this voiceover, and then they're intercutting, like, softcore sex over it. Like, hey, don't worry, we're going to get to the fucking. Like, don't worry. Like, if you can't make it through this first 15 seconds, it's coming. Like, it really was, like, an interesting juxtaposition to put hardcore sex in the mountain scenery.
Yeah.
Listen, the people falling, it is really hard to, for those of you who haven't seen it, it is really hard to describe why it was so funny, because it's not even that it's the way people are falling. like in the air. It's so chaotic and so frantic. And especially the long shot, the wide shot of the dummies falling. There's no, first of all, I thought when you fall off a mountain, you die within from just a heart attack within. Wait, almost immediately.
That would be my guess.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, but you would have a couple of seconds of being alive. I mean,
you'd have a couple seconds, but they seem to be alive the whole time.
Yeah.
Like the whole time until impact.
And they seem to be mic'd.
Yes.
They also seem to be, we can hear them breathing, struggling. It's like, we're really inside of this fall.
Again, not to like hammer it home, but I will just piggyback on what June is saying. June and I are fans of Wipeout, all incarnations, Australia, America, New with John Cena and Nicole Byer. And the way that the people on that show, Wipeout, fall, they have to run across a course and they get like, you know, punched with like a big giant mitt, you know, and they fly into the water. It looked like that. They were launched in
yeah,
a way
it
that was, it was as
it
if
did.
The mountain was fighting them. It was like if they all took a punch from the mountain. Because what we're seeing is them just skidding down the side of the mountain.
What would happen is, they would just slide down the face of the ice they're trying to climb, you know?
But here it looks like they hit a ramp from like a Disney cartoon, and Goofy is like, woo! Like it really is.
It does seem as though you're right. They all appear to be launched off of the mountain. Yeah, June is physicalizing it right now.
I am, because it was almost like they were doing like cartwheels off of it. Like that their limbs were sort of rotating around. It looked like if you were to go to the circus and see a bunch of clowns like fall out of a fire truck or something. It really did look like what that would
look
like.
Very evocative image.
By the way, you should definitely, June has been, and I don't want to blow this up too early, but June has been artistic director for the New York City Circus, and she's been doing some great stuff.
The NYCC, New York City Circus, you know.
One of the most popular circuses. They have decommissioned
New York Fire Department fire trucks. They pack them full of clowns, and the clowns fly out.
They just shoot them out. Now, I will say this. We're hearing Heather Graham do this voiceover. We don't know how she's connected. We go to our next scene to establish her life. Okay, I want to play a clip of this because...
Why don't you start at the beginning? It's always the easiest.
I'd already been in London a year and a half. For the first 6 months, I'd been incredibly lonely. Then I met Jake. I designed CD-ROMs and websites for corporate clients.
That must pay well.
It sounds fancier than it is. Jake was an engineer. Tunnels and bridges, that sort of thing.
All right, so we get this idea. She's designing CD-ROMs. She says a line there like, I know that sounds exciting, but it's not. It doesn't. It doesn't sound like, ooh, you just
like. And later when we see her in the creative meeting, and she's like, the game we have on the CD-ROM is only attractive to men. Women don't like games. Women like stories. And I'm like, she was right. This is not an exciting job, you know, like trying to rope people into putting CD-ROMs into their computer to like buy a product.
Well, by the way, she also pronounces it CD-ROMs.
CD-ROMs. By the way, she also, but it also seems like it's not even designing like CD-ROMs. It's like designing like, okay, I work at Taco Bell. Here's an interactive CD-ROM that I would learn how to like work the cash register. It's like instructional videos for corporations. Because at one point her boss, who June, you thought was played brilliantly by who?
Who did I think that was? Now I can't remember.
June thought that
who
in
did
this
I think
film
it was?
That it was Alan Rickman. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she bet me.
Alan Rickman.
She bet me, stopped the movie to pull up IMDb to prove to me it was Alan Rickman.
Wow.
It
you
was
know, not- here's what I'll say to your credit, June. It's not, obviously, Alan Rickman, but the man looks, he has Alan Rickman-esque features. He's that kind of a British
very
guy.
Very much so. And then I thought the woman was Jane Seymour.
Oh, wow. By the way, I would so much rather watch the movie that you just cast than the movie we watched.
Well, by the way, this is what this movie feels like. It all feels like a copy.
We also got the lesser fines.
Yes.
You're going to get I thought everybody was someone else.
Yeah.
You know, and that other person was better.
And I will say this. The whole movie can be really encapsulated with the opening shot of the city. I said to June, like, you know, look, I'm not the most traveled person, but when I see an establishing shot, I would hope to know, like, oh, I think we are here. That establishing shot of the city, I was like, okay, where are we? Are we in London? Are we in Toronto? Are we in San Francisco? Like, there was nothing iconic. It was just sort of like cityscape. But we find out that she is a...
She's an expat living in merry old England.
Who apparently prints out every photo on her photo stream, because there is a line of photos on the wall of her and her boyfriend that look like they were taken all within the same afternoon. And she's like, I can't decide. Let me frame all of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, they really have to drill down in those first moments to make you understand that she has, both in the voiceover and in that set design with all the pictures and all that, that she has found love. She has finally found her man, dot, dot, dot. Everything is great. She finally is happy in her life. And then on her way to work, she and Voldemort's brother touch the same traffic light and have instant, like, electric chemistry. The movie wants us to think.
I mean,
well, just to go back for a
second,
like, I don't, oh God, I'm sorry if this is a terrible thing to say, but all of the photos on her wall are professional and photos of the two of them. It looks like they went somewhere and brought a photographer and took photos
like glamour shots.
Glamour shots of just like frolicking around. And I have been to a couple of homes where people have an unusual number of professional photographs of themselves.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
I find those people to be suspect.
I don't like it. I really do,
too. If you have too many pictures of you and your family around, I'm suspect.
I'm not suspect of too many pictures. So I'm suspect of too many professional photos.
Hmm. Oh.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. I'm suspect of too many photos of the couple it is. Like, if you have kids, sure, you have more photos up, probably. But if you're just
in a couple,
you're not even engaged. You're plastering your house with all the, like, it feels
what
like.
What are you, why do you need that? My question is, why do you need to be physically reminded of the fact that you are in a, like, why do you need
this? If you're Heather Graham and you're in that apartment with what's his face, you just look at him. Like, yeah, he's right there.
Exactly.
Like, well, here's the other thing, people. Can we just address, like, wouldn't this movie be a lot stronger if she wasn't into this guy? Like, she's like, you know what?
Yes.
I am discontented. I haven't found somebody, but I'm with this person. But they position this movie like, I'm in love. This is perfect. Like, she seems perfect. So I think the minute that she, you know, exchanges glances with Joseph Fiennes and she's like, I'm ready to fuck this guy. Like, it feels like, oh, you're a bad person. She continually will show us throughout the film she's a bad person, just in the way her tact. She has very bad tact. But I feel like it makes the movie immediately make her a little bit more unlikable, that this perfect life is simply upended by a furtive glance.
Well, and, you know, I wouldn't even mind that if they gave us a little bit more. You know, they really only give us this one setup and then it's immediately undercut. She leaves her boyfriend. Goodbye. They have breakfast together. It's cute. In the voiceover, she's telling the police officer how much she loves him and
how great
their life is.
By the way, does anyone have breakfast with their, like, whenever I see that in a film, I'm like, are people having breakfast on a work day? Like, I don't think that we're sitting down at the table having breakfast.
I don't know. That might be something.
Nice.
I think it's just, I noticed it too. And I thought, though, that's for people who are both having to get to work at the same time. And they might be like, you know, we'll sit down and we'll go to our respective commutes after we have a breakfast.
Well, I mean, he does pay for her tunnel tickets or her tube tickets, which he really throws in her face
later on. I know. God,
really?
He really uses that as ammunition. I mean, I think it's nice to have breakfast together. But
I mean, I would like to have breakfast together, but it seems like they could get some more sleep in time if they just, you know, if they plan it right. Grab that bagel on the way to work.
Well, listen, here's the thing. He is a snooze in the sack. So
yes,
that's not, you know, that's a,
well, comparatively,
that's a
comparatively.
And that is what we are meant to understand, is that
right,
she's with a good guy who doesn't, like, drive her wild. And she meets Joseph Fiennes. And within exchanging glances, she goes to work, is distracted, goes down to the bookstore where Joseph Fiennes is. He walks
still
out.
Weirdly.
He walks out. They don't say anything to each other. They get into a cab. They drive to his home, and they have sex.
Oh,
like,
and
they explicit they had, sex instantly.
They have sex, and I'm always kind of... these are movies that make me cringe a little bit because I'm like, ooh, I feel like it's too, I'm seeing too much. It's too personal. They attack each other like animal. I mean, they are, it is yeah. an animalistic, like he is boom, boom, boom. And they are going at it. So it does make
I wrote, they immediately start going to town on each other.
Yes. I mean.
And I believe they don't know each other's names yet. They don't talk. They show them. They make sure to show them in the cab silent.
And she has her hand on the door like, am I going to be attacked? And then the driver is looking. They add a lot of shots that
yes,
make us, I don't know how to feel about it. It's like, she. I
well,
guess she's second guessing it.
The movie is, from the very beginning, framing him as potentially dangerous for the second half of the movie's plot, you know?
Right. But at the same time, she has done everything, like, he doesn't follow her. He goes into the bookstore. She goes back into work. She peers out the window. She, by the way, has a meeting at work, full meeting, then goes back and is like, let me go check out that bookstore. Just in. All right. So if we just put this all at face value, Heather Graham is dumb as shit because she just went probably to work for 90 minutes to 2 hours. And I'm being conservative there. And then goes, you know, I'm going to check that bookstore, see if he's still there. Like, who would still be like I'm just go back and she peeks in like woo like a little like you know
an around the corner peeper
like an around the corner like she is
and gets busted
because he still is there, which is really the hardest part of this whole story that I have to buy. Like, all right, so then he happened to be there on the day that there was a signing. He also is the guy in the front window, but she doesn't put that together, even though. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, there's a lot. There's a lot of details here.
The movie is, especially in the first hour, like up front, like horny.
Yes.
You know, the movie is explicitly horny. They are just, they have, you know, instant chemistry and cannot be held back. You know, they are just like they are sent down. I think this, I mean, her name is Alice. I'm assuming this is going to be an Alice in Wonderland down the rabbit hole.
Alice Tallis is her name.
Yeah. you know, she goes through the looking glass of like being like this sexual discovery with this high adventurer guy who's a mountain climber. We find out who's the mountain climber from who was on the mountain where the tragedy occurred from the opening scene,
and
et cetera,
he's doing press for a book that he didn't write that is written about him and how he saved people. Like, so that's an interesting story too. It's like he is signing books
but that
about
story,
him.
So I'm confused.
Yes,
is that story about what we saw in the beginning? Because
yes.
It seemed like all of those people fell off crazily. What? How many? It's, and he, that he was the only survivor.
No,
so
I think he's
a bunch of people fell
and
off.
His sister.
He, and
some
and his
survived.
Sister, a couple people stayed on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Somebody says to her when she goes in the bookstore later, and he's not there, or something like that. The bookstore guy says, or somebody says, you know, he's a hero. He saved six lives that day, or something to that effect. But they also
quite a
lost.
Scene.
They also lost. Yeah.
And by the way, this story comes back up multiple times. It figures prominently into the end of the film. But when he is explaining, I mean, okay, first of all, she goes and buys the book. She buys the book and then immediately has the book next to her, goes to visit him again, and is, it feels like she's just jerking it just with the idea of the book in her hand in the cab going to her.
Oh, that was,
you know,
weird.
Yeah, the book is like, the book has even
well,
a sexual power
like that,
to it.
Yeah, I felt like that was more because she knows she's going to see him.
She's
right,
on
so she's her way to
ready.
See him. Or something. I don't know. I don't know if it was actually sexualizing
the book
itself.
The book is. The book is.
By the way, I would have liked this movie so much more if she fucked the book in one scene.
Well, she says to him, I mean, my favorite line in this movie, I mean, the dialogue in this movie is is not even first pass. It's like, I'm racing to explain a story to you. Like, okay, so what happens? She's like, oh yeah, I like your book. And then he's like, oh yeah, well, actually that wasn't a thing. Like, the dialogue is so, like, she's like, I saw your book. It looks cool. Like, and he's like, well, it's actually not cool. a lot of people died. And she's like, oh. And then
that made me laugh so hard. Yeah. People died that day.
And she's like, including
the woman
cool.
he loved.
Fucking idiot. Yeah.
Including
cool.
the woman he loved. She's like, but
glad the book is cool.
Yeah. I loved your book. The book about the love of my life dying. Oh, cool. Thank you.
And then he goes.
That
to
would make me honestly say, did you read the book?
She didn't. Yeah. She just said it looks cool. Like she just bought it and she's like, yeah, it looks cool. Like the cover of it looks cool. God. Like I'm into the cover. And that kind of feels like her personality in a nutshell. But when she says it looks cool, he goes, ah, everyone died that day. And then he describes how suffocation works, which we get, like, he describes it in a way as if he's like, look, let me explain the most complicated thing that you've ever heard. And then he takes a goldfish out here.
Do you know what it's like over 20,000 feet? It's like this. Without air, the brain cells die. It shuts down. And then the rest of the body follows.
I mean, this whole scene where he has to show her a goldfish, like, and almost dying?
This looks very real to me. Like, yes. This is not, like, an effect.
Yeah.
You know, this movie is too old to have an effective, like, effect here. They really did this to this fish.
Oh, I feel like goldfish don't get any PETA treatment. Like, I feel like people are like, we got bigger fish to fry, quite literally.
Literally.
It's such a bizarre moment. Like, but I guess that's setting, because I guess this movie is, I'm having trouble going, what am I watching? Because he does bring her into, like, sexual asphyxiation, right? That's a part of the story. But that's not, like, a driving part of it either.
Well, a lot of it is they are, like, the movie is telling us they are falling in love. She dumps her boyfriend and tries to move in with Adam, is the character's name.
Yes.
Joseph finds his name. And she is just instantly besotted and making life choices. She, if you notice, she changes her entire wardrobe. Her clothes are different.
She totally Kanye Julia Fox is in this relationship.
It's a real glow up.
Uncut jams.
She suddenly is wearing all these bright uncut jams.
The fact that Netflix changed it for a day is the funniest thing.
Oh, wait,
thing.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. For a day, Netflix changed it to Uncut Jams and then, like, wrote a fake bio for it that was like...
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was...
Oh, that's very funny.
Oh, can we just talk about the breakup? Now we see him very differently. He's, like, in underwear watching a soccer game.
Her living boyfriend, who she lives with.
And they need to do something because they live in seemingly, like, a studio apartment. It's very small when you get to see it. Like, they have to bring her, like, they show her, like, putting a vase on a table, like, late at night, because you know that someone's got to break that fucking vase. Like, that table needs to be flipped over. Like, they needed something to, like, just to have it there. Like, she puts it down, so in 30
in
seconds,
a minute,
goes,
yeah.
God damn it!
Which is so weird, because it's like, it could have just already been there, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, you know, this movie, though, is all about Chekhov's blank. Chekhov's vase, Chekhov's flare gun, Chekhov's... Everything is established before it's used. So
if
that you
understand
and explained. Everything is, like, really, like highlighted for the watcher to be like, now look, the flare gun works like this, and it lives right here. And so, but, you know, don't worry about it.
That is called, that is actually really good. You're planting seeds. You know, it's foreshadowing. It's Canterbury Tales.
Here's what I just want to, I just need to get to quickly because, you know, I knew right away that the sister was responsible.
Sure.
But
the sister played by Natasha McElhone. By the way, fantastic.
I would argue, Dean, that you probably know that because there are only four people in the movie, right? And two of them.
And we know that the sister was on the rock climbs with the brother. She's also a climber on his team.
That's right. But I still do not understand if... I do not understand why she was killing these women.
Oh.
And I still don't really understand.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I think that she molested him when he was 15. By the way, the way they handle like male and sibling sexual abuse is so disturbing in this movie and so careless and reckless and
the reveal
disgusting.
That there is an incest narrative comes
is so upsetting
at the very end in a way that is very unsettling.
I'm going to actually, I will play that clip so you can hear how they do it.
She didn't have to die. If only she told me she was going back to Michael. Why did you do this? Why did you do this? Who do you think gave him his first piece of silk? He was just 15. I'm talking about fucking Alice! That's right! We fucked right here! Adam is mine! He's mine!
Why?
Yeah, so...
And I think as an audience, we are meant to be like titillated by this, and it's just so horrible. Anyway, so I was just very upset and disturbed by that. But I think she's just deranged. And any woman that was dating him, if they left him, she would then kill that woman.
Or I think that she was killing them. Or
if it looked like they might stay.
Yes.
I think she was killing them if it looked like that.
Yes.
Yeah, because she says
she wants them out.
Remember Heather Graham reads the letter where the woman says, I'm going back to my husband. And I'm going back to my husband. And then when Natasha McElhone hears that, she says, I would have let her live if I knew she was going back to her husband.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But then here's my question. Who is sending Heather Graham those notes?
Natasha McElhone. She admits it in the car.
Yeah.
She says, I sent you those notes.
Yeah.
Because I think what she's saying is the notes are her effort to be like, I don't want to have to kill you. So,
right.
So
she's trying to
slow it down,
she's
lady.
Pushing it. She's trying to help get them out of the picture naturally. And then she kind of hides it by saying, look, you know, he's got a temper and I'm trying to protect you. So she's going that way. But now Adele's letter about going back to her husband, that was Adele writing to Joseph Fiennes going,
and this
Adele,
is Adele Dazeem.
Yeah, Adele Dazeem.
So now, okay,
now,
fine.
Wait. Now, is now, Adele...
Does Joseph Fiennes' character know that any of this happened? That these women died that way?
He only puts it together at the very end when he sees the two pictures. He puts it together that the sister is responsible.
Wait, but now I have a question about these two pictures, and I'm gonna.
And he finds the flawed climbing equipment in his sister's house.
And the necklace was the same. Well, I don't know.
And the necklace was the same. That's also what helps.
What was that necklace though?
Well, it's a necklace that the sister gives all of the women in Joseph's life. She marks them for death.
That's the mark. It's like once you get that necklace, you're going to be one step closer to death. I think we don't know because this movie is wall to wall voiceover. Because
we're
clearly
doing
a lot of work for it. Yes, a lot of stuff did not work. But here's the thing I will say, and I'm going to again open myself up to be incredibly stupid and just to understand Adele. Is she the doppelganger of Heather Graham? When I looked at those two Polaroids,
I thought they were the same person.
They did look similar. Yeah.
They looked so similar that I was like, I paused it and I was like, wait, that looks like Heather Graham.
I thought that that was Heather Graham.
Me
and that for
too.
Some reason, that Polaroid. Oh. So that's why I was looking for a different mystery.
Even more interesting movie.
Why is her picture in that house?
And why is her picture in that frame? And why is that woman putting a nudie photo into like, oh, this is my daughter. Oh, these great pictures of my daughter. Here she is topless out in front of a statue.
In a graveyard
moments before her death.
Well, and, like, she says that's the last picture I have. I think that's probably the last picture taken of her.
I wouldn't want that.
I found it amongst her artifacts or whatever they found.
But they looked so alike. And I understand that that's probably why Joseph Fiennes wants Heather Graham. But then I didn't find anyone to be commenting on that. Like, oh my gosh,
well,
you look just like her.
I Yeah, well, that's true. But I think what the, again, I'm doing a little bit of work for the movie. I think the movie in doing so is trying to tell the audience, this is his thing. He has a type. He has a system.
Right.
He finds a blonde. He takes her to the cemetery. Then he kills her. Boom, boom, boom. It's all
topless,
setting up.
Yes.
It's to convince us that he is the, it's a misdirect to convince us that he has a pattern of behavior that leads to murder.
Because
right?
This man is rage. Well, the reason why they show you how he's rage filled is one of the best sequences in the movie where Alice is walking down the street with her friend and she is mugged. Somebody puts a knife to her throat, this ne'er-do-well. And Joseph, they're going to meet Joseph Fiennes. But on the way of meeting Joseph Fiennes, he happens to be behind them like he was following them. And then he sees the attack and he chases down the attacker and then beats the living shit out of them. Like just...
like near death.
Near death. And then they start making out, him and Heather Graham.
Covered in blood.
Covered in
start
blood.
Start making out, and the camera is doing like Michael Bay style circles around them while people look on horrified.
I thought they were going to fuck on that police car because it, like, the cops are coming to the scene of the crime. People are like, what is going on here? And they're making out. He's like, marry me. Marry me.
Marry me tomorrow.
That'll never happen again. I won't let it. Are you okay?
Yeah.
I'll always be here, Alice.
Yeah.
I'll protect you. Say you believe me.
I believe you.
Do
believe
me. Marry me. Marry me.
Huh.
And soon. Tomorrow. The day after, as soon as possible, marry me.
Yes. Yes.
Like, so he's also not a sound man.
Well, I mean, this is where they start to build a case that is like he is dangerous. He is potentially a murderer. He is. This is when but this is an hour into the movie. The first hour has just been languid sex scenes and like nonsense. And suddenly it becomes like the thriller element kicks in and all that stuff goes away. And it becomes Heather Graham trying to solve like detective story. You know, she impersonates a journalist. She goes to talk to Adele's mom. She's like, it becomes just a detective story for the second half of the movie because thinks she has married a murderer, a rapist and a murderer, to be clear, which is what she's being told.
Right, because the article that comes out in the newspaper, there's somebody who writes in and says, hey, I know about this guy. He's no hero. He raped me. So then she pretends to be the newspaper writer, goes to visit this woman that he has raped, and then, I mean, Heather Graham, across the board on this movie, is making some bad choices. She then goes, tells the newspaper reporter, hey, by the way, I pretended I was you, and I interviewed her. And the newspaper reporter's like, wait, what? She's like, it's no big deal. I just needed to find out. I'm a wife.
I was curious.
And
the poor reporter was like, what if she calls my editor to ask about the story?
And she's like, whatever. And then she goes home and then tells Joseph Fiennes, like, hey, by the way, there was a woman who said that you raped her, and I went to go talk to her. And he's like, oh, her. Now, are we to believe that he did rape her or did not rape her?
Well, I think by the movie's logic, where they're trying to say, I feel like they're using the rape story to convince Heather Graham that he's, in fact, a rapist and a murderer.
Yes.
That he is a murderer and he's going to murder her. And while the movie then absolves him of the murders by making Natasha McElhone the murderer, it never answers the question. I think it never clarifies the rape at all. And so I think we are left to believe he is just a rapist, but not a murderer.
Or he's telling the truth.
Oh,
because,
my God.
Because, I mean, when he chases her out of the bucket, first of all, he ties her to the table. Because here's some other things that are weird about Joseph Fiennes. He ties her to a table, like, legs and arms, so she's splayed out there. And again, it looks like, is he going to do...
with rope that is already in place for this.
Well, I guess he knew that's what he was going to do. By the way, I'm going to say this. This movie had too much baggy clothes for them. The amount of
his
thriller...
His pants are so baggy!
They are.
His jackets, his cowl neck sweaters.
I mean, the fact that Heather Graham is wearing like a kimono-esque robe for the majority, like she's doing detective work, hard detective work in a kimono robe. I'm like, okay, everyone just
you
put
could
on some
fit
form-fitting
four
clothes.
People into his pant legs. It
and
is...
and it's a lot of Henleys and a lot of tapered leg cargo pants. But he ties her to this table, and you think it's going to be, and this is where the movie always is like tricky. It's like, is it bondage gone too far, right? Like, is that what we're about to see here? Like, he ties her to the table and they have like this passionate sex. And then he's like, I would never hurt you. But then he ties her to the table and he looks at her and he goes, I could break your neck. I love you so much. I'm like, well, first of all, do we say it? Like, we got to unpack that a little bit too. That's not a thing that you would say to someone. I could break your neck.
No, again, I feel like this is the movie just trying to convince us to believe that he is the murderer so that to not think of the sister as, but the movie really drills down on he is evil, capable of violence, as evidenced by the purse snatcher that he beats near to death. And now, through their kind of BDSM play, he is shown to be even more potentially violent or more dangerous, you know, and which is scaring her.
He does let her up to go pee, which is good. And then she escapes out the window, and then he chases her down like a straight up maniac. And this is like the tricky thing of this movie, because I understand you're supposed to go both ways. Like, oh, is he the murderer? Is he not the murderer? We don't know that much about him. She just got married to him. She's finally asking these questions. And by the way, this movie feels like it was written for a 21-year-old actress. At this point, Heather Graham is not 21 years old, I don't think. I mean, maybe she is.
I don't know. She looks really young.
I mean, yeah, she definitely plays the naivete, like, at an all-time high, I think, because it's like she seems very established in the world that she's in. Like, she is the head CD-ROM designer, and she is Rome. She is, you know, she seems to be ahead of the game. But when she runs out that window and she escapes out the window from him, he chases her. But what would he have done to her if he caught her? I guess is the question.
Lord. In the moment, we're meant to believe that he's going to do harm to her.
But now that we know that he's not that.
By the ending of the movie's reveal, I think he's concerned for her.
Okay. By the way, she's 32 years old when this movie comes out.
Okay.
So that she is definitely playing up the...
I think the idea we're meant to believe is like when he brings the jacket and shoes to the police station for her, that is actually like a caring move.
But he does it in front of the mirror with the
which seems so
manipulative.
I feel like the movie is constantly trying to manipulate us. And it's very hard to shit. I think he's a bad guy.
But he's not a murderer.
Of the murders, he is a bad guy.
Listen, you can be a total psychopath and not be a murderer.
Yes,
and
exactly.
I believe he is an absolute fucking twisted nut job.
And I believe
a red flag in human and sweater form. Like, yeah, he really is.
Well, so is she, though. Don't you think that she's like a bit of like... she is just as unkind. She is not a kind person. Like, the way she breaks up with her boyfriend, really cold. Like, I'm dumping you. And then the way that she like brings out her boyfriend's best friend, who happens to be a woman, and they're sitting there and she's like, I'm in love. Everything
hilarious.
Is great. And the friend's like, hey, chill. You're talking about my friend. Like, you're acting insane.
She's like, I won't even tell you about the lingerie. And the friend is like, I don't want to hear about
please
it.
Don't.
Your ex, my friend, is having a really hard time. You broke his heart. You ruined both of your lives.
And she seemingly gets...
But the hard thing, too, is that, like, I'm fine to, like... It would be fine if it was just like, oh, there's this crazy physical connection between the two of them. Like, okay. It's just the sex scenes and that piece of it become comical. They don't, because the sex scenes are so like happen, first of all, so quickly, and they have sex immediately. Before they even know each other's names, like, there's nothing really building. It's just, it happens. And then when they're basically having sex, like, after she's been mugged, it just becomes so embarrassing.
Yeah.
It is embarrassing to watch the two of them together.
It's too much. And I'm glad that the sex kind of cuts down at a certain point, but it is... like them making out in the street, you're like, you're both insane. She's getting married the next day. You are insane. Like there are like there's enough stuff here that like I don't trust anyone in this movie. I don't even trust the best friend of the ex boyfriend. She's not moving in with him either.
So when she was painting that room, I was like, what's going on here?
All pink? And she says, purple. Hey, look. She's like, oh yeah, purple. And she goes, sorry, I'm colorblind. And she says, oh, well, it's just an age-old story of I moved in to console my best friend about his breakup. Like, hold on. You moved into an apartment to console your best friend from a breakup? Like, I get, like, moved in to help someone who is sick. But, like, has anyone ever moved in to console someone from a breakup? Like what is going on there?
Yeah.
Well, I think she moves in, I think, because they start seeing each other. You
okay,
know?
I thought you said I originally moved in to help him be consoled. I thought that's how she said
I think
said,
she was it? Saying, you know, I started to take care of my friend and then we kind of fell for each other,
got it.
You know. But that seems to be theirs. They're the only people having a normal series of events happen to them.
I guess.
You know, what's happening to Heather Graham's character is like is the plot of a bad movie, you know.
Now listen, if you're dating somebody and they have like a closet that has a padlock on it.
Yeah.
You know, it's
such an old timey. By the way,
it's
such an old timey pirate padlock, too. I mean, it was
the key was gigantic.
He lives alone. Like, there's no reason. What is the reason to have a lock like that on a door if it's just.
I thought it was
me, myself,
be,
and I living in the apartment.
I thought it was going to be like a 50 Shades of Grey thing where it's like, oh, that's where he keeps all of his sex tools and he doesn't want to like show her his sex tools right away. But no, it seems like.
But does she ever ask him just like, hey, what's in that that closet upstairs? I saw it had a lock on it. What like what's that about?
They don't appear to have conversations.
No,
yeah.
they never have a chat. We never see a scene in which they are just talking. They are either staring at each other or fucking and or are running away from each other, or she is running away from him and he is spying on her. You know, it is the movie never lets you sit in. This is their day to day relationship. You know what I mean?
They're certainly really, not having breakfast with each other.
No, I mean.
Exactly.
They are, like, she seems giddy around him. And when she goes to answer his phone, it does feel like a high school. Like, there's something so pure about Heather Graham. I think it's, like, her face. She just seems so, like, light and airy. Like, when she answers his phone, it feels like she's never answered a phone before. Like, you know, like, everything to her is new. I will also say that makes some of the reactions to when she's scared to be some of the funnier scenes out of the movie.
Listen, the other thing I was like, well, surely her tech skills and her knowledge of CD ROMs is going to come into play here. Like, we're going to see her digitally track down.
Get in the virtual reality world, yeah.
Yeah, track down, like, the mystery here and, like, unlock it all. That never happens.
No.
You know, she doesn't
we're
use
dealing
any skill.
With like locks and keys and hikes and flare guns and, you know,
she doesn't use
digging
anything.
Digging things shit up with like her hands, basically. But
why is she digs a corpse up with her own hands?
Okay,
you know?
Here's my question. This is why I still feel like there's a lot of the mystery that's not resolved for me. So that corpse, Adele,
mm-hmm. Right?
Who's missing?
Who's been missing? So she was killed 8 months ago.
She is not the same person who fell off the mountain.
So yeah, she's not the mountaineer death.
People fell off the mountain, and then Adele is an addition to the mountain.
Is there anybody else?
By the way, how is this guy getting over Adele? Like, that's another thing that worries me. Yeah. It's like Adele has
or
been
even
missing.
Mentions her.
Or meant like he so
and he so we're meant to believe when he calls. Adele's mom, again, retroactively, when he calls Adele's mom to find out what's going on with the missing persons case, that, I guess we're meant to believe, is genuine. He genuinely, caringly, is worried about his missing ex-girlfriend.
But what if Adele comes back and...
He's married.
He's married. He didn't even wait 8 months.
Yeah, he moves on quick.
By the way, why was he staying at his sister's house when they seemingly live very close to each other?
Unclear.
Okay. Because
I have a problem with that, too, because he's staying at his sister's house and he's fucking all over that house.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No thanks.
And I mean, and that's just so gross. So when the sister comes back and is cleaning up all of his stuff, like, and Heather Graham's there, I'm like, this dude, although now that I understand more about their relationship.
No, she would like that, I think.
Yeah.
Well, but what was the issue that she had?
Juices are everywhere.
She said, because they're definitely not using condoms. Like, I don't feel like that sex scene is that first.
Definitely not.
Definitely not condoms.
And they have not talked at all.
And by the way, she goes after her ho-hum guy. And she's trying, like, I mean, first of all, that's like, I mean, you know, she's having filet mignon and then she's trying to have a McDonald's burger and she's kind of compare and contrast.
Wow.
So it's going to fall flat. But I'm going to say that, like, there's all these like weird things that are set up. Like, she's like, oh, he always takes down pictures. Well, wait, what is that about? Like, he is taking down pictures in her house of himself or of her?
I think he's taking down pictures that include the woman who died on the mountain, who he was in love with.
All right, because he feels like pictures steal people's souls?
Well, that's what she was explaining to me. I thought it was just because he didn't want to be reminded of the love he lost on the mountain.
I mean, so this guy is
a
tragic.
Natasha McElhone says, like, I like pictures because they remind me of the people I love or whatever. And Joseph Fiennes doesn't like them because he thinks it steals his soul or some nonsense.
I'm like, and what? Like, we're dropping a lot. It's like, at a certain point, it's like, and he likes oatmeal. It's like,
and the cat is watching.
What am I doing with this information? You're giving me so much information that I don't even know what to parse out. I'm like, what is important and what's not important? That's why when the flare gun comes into play and he does that elaborate monologue about, oh, look, it looks like he was replenishing a flare gun. Like, the flare gun looked like it wasn't there. He's like, we got married. We're getting married. Let's run into the cemetery. I'm going to take a topless picture of you real quick, which, by the way, is Photoshop when we look at it later. But they were in the location. Why didn't someone just take a picture of her in front of the thing? We have that shot, but it was
unclear.
But it seems like Joseph Fiennes is like, oh, right, I'm putting his flare gun back here because I guess someone took it. Like, he didn't take it out of the box and then shoot it. Or maybe he did. I don't know. I thought he took it out of his bag.
No, I agree.
I think it was there.
And why is he shooting a flare? And why is an established climber shooting a flare gun? Like, wouldn't that send an alarm?
He says to Heather Graham, hey, look, and he shoots a flare up into the sky right after they've gotten married. I felt in a way to be like,
celebratory.
We did like almost like a firework. But anybody in the surrounding area would say somebody needs help.
Well, that's,
you know, that,
like,
flare
yeah.
means somebody needs help.
There's like
on
no
the trail.
Yeah,
for sure. Sure.
And then he like leaves her alone in the forest and is like, come find me. And then she like walks for like a couple hours to then find this fuck cabin.
Well, the movie like makes a twist. The minute they get married, the movie's like, you blew it, Heather Graham, because now he's a monster.
Right.
And guess what? You got it. You're in over your head because exactly. He abandons her in the woods. He like literally runs away from her. And what you find out is so that he can get to the cabin first and set it up with all the candles and all the blah, blah, blah. But really, it's like he's a dick. You know, he's a dick who is being like purposefully kind of scaring her or making her feel alone or making her feel in a way that is, I feel like, manipulating her into being like in his thrall, you know?
But I feel like I don't even get that because even when they do, like, when he's choking her in that scene, like, nothing gets too rough in the sex. It seems like they're both consensual participants. She's always going along with him. And I feel like that is such an interesting, I don't know, a weird choice. It's like, you're walking me down this one pathway of, like, will she find her limit? What's her limit? But they don't ever really do. They don't really push the sex story. It's not like 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, sex like goes away in the second half of the movie. The minute the movie posits that he might be a murderer, they really don't have sex again.
Yeah. And it's also like when she, oh God, again, so many red flags. Like the conversation where she's asking him, like, did you sexually assault, rape this woman? He does not put down his newspaper.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he, like, brushes it off in a very gaslighting way.
In a way, like, saying, like, ugh, everyone asked me about this.
Like,
yes, I didn't rape this woman.
If your partner is not willing to stop reading the daily newspaper for that conversation, I don't care if he did. I don't care if he didn't. I don't care what the story is. Like, you have to.
Yeah, this warrants a conversation.
Yeah. Like, put down your paper.
Stop reading Family Circus and.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, eyes up and, like, we're going to have a conversation about this.
And then,
it was just so shocking to me.
Which, again, makes him just as much. A villain. It makes him just as much a villain as if he was the murderer. It doesn't matter. Absolutely. He's still a villain.
She doesn't end up with him. And they thank God.
I thought the movie was gonna
absolve him of the murders. I don't know if I can do this.
Exactly. I thought and I was so glad that they do not end up together because he is a lunatic.
But then the other thing is, they don't end up together, but it still seems from that last shot where she's going down the escalator, he's coming up the escalator, and they lock eyes again. Like, it still feels like she's kind of haunted by him and by, you know, this, attraction to him. And I'm like, it's just confounding because he is still... I think one of the worst people she's ever encountered in her entire life.
I would ask this about her because he asked her from the very beginning, trust me, trust me, trust me. He said that a few times. She does not trust him. If she just trusted him, wouldn't they be in a great relationship?
No.
She'd be dead.
Yeah.
Wait.
Somewhere.
Oh, right. If she didn't start to do some of the investigative footwork, I guess she would be dead. So maybe
eventually Natasha McElhone would have gotten her.
But I guess from his point of view,
when he finds the necklace and says, "Where did you get this necklace?" which matches his missing ex-girlfriend's necklace, she says, "Your sister gave it to me." At that moment, he should put it together. At that moment, he should be like, my sister is marking my girlfriends for death.
I thought I thought the sister wanted to fuck her, too, by the way. I felt that there was an energy.
Well, that was very clearly being insinuated.
Yeah. We were being toyed with that. But I thought that I was confused about when he picked up that necklace because it seemed like when she came out at that giant, snow... climbing event, whatever that thing was, which was packed to the gills. It seemed like he did clock the necklace there because she comes out with that necklace on.
Yeah.
And he's getting pissed off with her at that point. Like he's starting to get he's starting to I'm not telling her I'm on a talk show. I'm reading Family Circus.
Talk show.
I remember when he goes, I booked a talk show appearance. What's the big deal? She's like, you didn't tell me about it. And he's like, meh. And his friend goes to pick him up to drive him to a talk show. And then
which is framed in a way that is almost like, oh, he's a liar. He's keeping secrets again to keep us feeling I genuinely believe if she had just stayed at home and turned on the TV, she would have seen him on television.
He was definitely on a talk show. He was definitely on a talk show.
Was doing a chat show appearance.
And it seemed he seems like he'd be a terrible guest on a chat show. You don't want to see him on Graham Norton, just telling a really depressing story about killing a fish.
Yeah, people died that day.
I love your book. It's fantastic. It's not fantastic. People died.
And we're also talking to Tom Hanks, who has a very funny story from the making of Larry Crown.
But the idea that she also goes to that rock climbing event or the mountain climber event, and she's isolated in the top. He doesn't take her around. It seems like the minute he gets married to her.
He's such a dick.
Yeah.
Right.
He's such a fucking dick. And that's the thing. The movie is so weird because I also kind of felt like her ex-boyfriend was a little bit of a dick in the end as well.
Wait, how do you see him at the end?
That moment where I guess to me, if I were him and I had been in this long relationship with someone and they, after they brought in a vase of flowers while I'm watching soccer, just announced I'm leaving you in this moment, I would be like, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that is what you're saying, June, is how adults would talk to each other.
Well, he does in a moment, hey, can we talk about
what's
this?
What's going on?
He does say can we talk for a second? She's like, no, I met someone because she goes, I'm leaving you. And he's like, wait.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, wait, cool, let's talk about this. And she's like, no, I met someone. He's like, God damn it. Like, that's when he gets upset, you know.
Which is fine, I guess. But I just found everyone to be unappealing in a way. Like, there was nobody. I thought Heather Graham was insane and I didn't understand her.
Also, her relationships at work. Everyone seems to hate her at work, but she yet seems to be like, the fax machine's empty, you dummy. Like, they treat her like she's an idiot.
They also give her this moment where, because of Joseph Fiennes' effect on her, and she's all now happy and excited, and she's changed her wardrobe and everything, she, like, takes a bigger swing at work about, and they're like, great, you won the account, you're in charge now. And I keep writing in my notes while she's doing detective work, isn't she supposed to be inventing CD-ROM stories? she's not going to work at all
anymore.
By the
way, when you see her notepad, because she's distracted by Joseph Fiennes on their first furtive glance, and the guy is talking about what they need to do. He goes, we are the pioneers of,
not Alan Rickman.
Not Alan Rickman says, we are the pioneers of, industrial, informative, text. She just writes down the word pioneer.
And she has like smiley faces and other doodles on that pad.
And that meant that at some point, the director said, we need an insert shot of what she's doing on the pad.
Yeah.
And they had to frame it. And somebody in the art department had to doodle. There's also a little doodle of a figure, like a stick figure.
Yeah, there's like a smiley face.
Yeah. And I'm like, that is the doodle of like a 19-year-old.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That is the paper of a child.
She's acting like a kid. There is she really is like, she doesn't seem like she's going to work at all, ever. When she announces, again, talk about the dialogue in this movie. When she announces at the end, going to get my hair trimmed, I'll be back after lunch, going to get my hair trimmed was such an, like, I don't even think I've ever heard anyone, like, going to get my hair trimmed. I don't know why it struck me as weird, but it is weird.
I wrote it down because I also thought it was a weird way to phrase that. I'm going to get my hair trimmed. I don't think anybody, wouldn't you just say I'm going to go to get my hair done or cut or whatever?
I mean, I don't know that I would tell anyone at work that I was leaving to go, hours to go get my hair cut.
Here is the thing I'm going to say that I don't know if you guys were bothered by this, but it made me incensed. For the first two-thirds of the movie, in very kind of noir-y, erotic thrillery way, Heather Graham is doing VO, but the VO is a conversation she's having with a police officer.
Right.
Three quarters of the way through the movie, we catch up to that scene with the police officer in the police station, and it's now we are current, okay? And then she leaves the police station and the rest of the movie happens, but she still has VO.
Well, but
she talking to?
But did you stay for the post-credit scene?
Because
the post-credit scene is her having coffee with that police officer and then they fuck. And then
that would be incredible. That would be incredible.
So then
but there
I
is
left
a reality of like the movie really is not. This is where I'm like, this is egregious.
There was no VO in this movie. There was no VO on the page.
VO.
There was no VO on that page. And they retroactively, again, listen to the end VO.
And that's how it ended. Yet not a day goes by without at least one thought about the passion. Maybe I was so blinded by it. I missed all the clues to his past. Maybe a flatlander like me can't live at that altitude. Maybe it never would have been possible to sustain what we had. Maybe. Well, that's what I tell myself.
Like, that NVO, she's like, I'm a flatlander? Like, has that ever even been a part of the story, truthfully?
Yeah, they said it early in the movie.
They said it in the beginning.
But it's also like, that's not the thrust of this movie. Like, that
it's
she
also
couldn't
like
survive
the VO
high
wasn't
altitudes.
VO. The VO that we've been listening to wasn't VO. It was it was a dialogue scene that we eventually catch up to.
Is she writing
so
her own
book?
Guy writing it for her. And this
what
is like
this VO?
I don't know.
Who is this for?
I think what they were going for is this idea of like she's from the Midwest. She's a Flatlander. You know, it's not just about climbing. It's about, is she willing to like pursue a path that's really dangerous and unexpected? Is she going to leave her ho-hum life with this guy and the world of CD Roams?
It wasn't set up as ho-hum. And that's my big issue too. It's like, give me at least, show me, like she seems to be, they said to her in the beginning, they establish her character as like, you are the person. Like they literally say, like they brought her in because she does, like she's good at this. They give her some sort of title in the beginning. So it's not like, oh, she's the shy secretary. Like what's her arc? Like what is the arc of this character?
I hear what you're saying. It's like, she does seem like she might, it's hard to know if she's like sexually satisfied in the beginning of the movie. I think we are meant to believe that she thinks she is until this gentleman.
She has this,
She puts her hand on that walk sign and everything changes and she realizes like, oh my gosh, I don't know anything. And then this whole thing unlocks. But it's just so dumb.
It's so dumb. Well, and later in VO, she says, sometimes I think about what if I hadn't touched that sign? What if I'd never met him? Or what if she posits this life she might have had if she had never, you know, connected with, if I hadn't looked up and like met his eyes or whatever. And it really is this, I think the movie thinks it's like an erotic take on a Alice through the Looking Glass and sexuality, her like discovering her sexuality or discovering some sort of sexual identity that she didn't heretofore know existed. But it doesn't do a good job of that. And it really makes a mess of everybody's life, because at the end of the day, to what you were saying, Paul, I don't know what she wants.
Right.
I don't know what Heather Graham's character's want is in the movie writ large, right? I don't know what she wants.
That's the thing. It's like she has a great job. She's respected, even though her coworkers seem jealous of the attention that fake Alan Rickman is giving her. Like, you got the goods. And so she's got that. She's not... I even think that, like, we're told that the sex has changed her, that she bought nice lingerie and she's dressing more colorfully. But again, like, I guess her hair is in a bun in the beginning and then it's down. That maybe is a change.
She seems to be more confident at work and is getting more responsibility.
She barely is at work. She's barely out, and she never even takes charge in the sexual. She doesn't take charge in this. Like, to me, put him on the table, ratchet him down, and then go, did you rape that girl? Like, you know, like, give her some power. I guess she kills. I mean, we didn't talk about that. She does kill Natasha McElhone.
Yeah.
Whose name in the movie is Deborah. Which I really had a problem with.
So Deborah,
this is not a Deborah.
No, that's not Deborah at all. I mean, Joanna, maybe I'll take that. I mean, but she kills her, and it doesn't seem like the police are taking her into custody at all. Like the police aren't,
or
like,
even
like they're not even going to question her. Joseph Fiennes is brought. Like they're like, oh, we're taking you to talk to you a little bit. But like the cops,
but you're
here,
free to go, ma'am.
I know you shot her, probably in self-defense. We'll get back to you. Take your time. Hit us up. Here's our number. Text us if you got some information. Like, she just out and out killed this woman who no one knows is a killer. Like, no one has any information. Like, she's a...
Sure.
You know, she's not really holding a weapon. I guess she's holding a shovel. But we don't know the full story at this point. Testify? I don't know. It's like, it's such a... Like, you want her on the stand at the end doing this monologue, and that's how I... Like, you know, you want to see some change or power or something. And it just seems
a botched
relationship.
For her to I don't know, like, really make sure and drill down on the fact that, like, yes, she did, you know, cracked the case on who murdered these women, but also, like, is holding him accountable for his actions inside of all of this, you know, including the alleged rape, including all of the elements that have been, all of the things that are a testament to his volatile, violent kind of personality that I think she also needs to be like, I got to get away from this, you know?
Also, justice for the people who also were killed in that mountain accident. Why is Natasha McElhone killing them?
Yeah.
What did they do? They did nothing. Yeah. They're just friends.
They did nothing.
They did nothing.
They just happened to be like harnessed on the same thing, you know? And fucked up. Yeah.
I mean, honestly. So fucked up. Obviously, we have opinions about this movie, but there are people out there with a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
subjective. I need a second opinion.
Thank you, John Lajoie. Now, interesting thing about this movie. Very rarely, if ever, have we done a movie that has zero on Rotten Tomatoes. Zero.
Oh, wow.
Never done a movie that has zero. But here, there are 477 reviews of Killing Me Softly. And basically, a majority of them are five stars. I mean, the people love this movie. Yeah.
But so, it still has a zero?
For Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't understand.
Rotten Tomatoes is critics.
So,
this is five stars from Amazon. So this
I see.
So I just wanted to bring up that the zero Rotten Tomatoes is a different metric.
So my guess is critics are like, this movie stinks, and Amazon is like, horny weirdos love it.
Well, yes. So Nate Kiley, who does all of our research, did a great job of going through and finding, look, I'm just going to say it. There's a lot of creepy reviews here. I'm not going to get into how everyone is watching this movie and all that sort of stuff. I will say that there's plenty of them to enjoy if that's what you want to read. I'm going to read some of the other ones here from Shopper. Shopper likes, love the suspense and exploration of being controlled. Surrender, submission, and domination. Erotic asphyxiation. Great sex scenes for mainstream actors. It's not a blockbuster, but it's definitely entertaining. Five stars. And then we get this one, which I think is maybe missing the point, from Blair. Blair writes, I've always loved this movie. I could watch it over and over again. It's crazy what love can make a person do.
Ugh.
Five stars. I don't think
that is a cry for help.
And then there is a lot of Joseph Fiennes love here. A lot of people who are like, ooh la la, Joseph Fiennes. But yeah, that's just a little taste. And again, I'm avoiding a lot of them just because they're creepy. But I'll tell you this. This movie was going to be released in theaters, but they decided to switch that up for a direct-to-DVD launch.
What year is this?
2003 was when it was released. It was shot in 2002. Those sex scenes took 7 days to film.
Oh, God.
And her and Joseph Fiennes both did not wear modesty pouches because they wanted to make it as real as possible so the audience would feel like they are not being cheated, is what they both have said in interviews.
And then the movie went direct to DVD.
Yes.
What a...
And the budget of this movie was $25 million.
Oh, my God, really?
$25 million. It made $7 million. The top three movies of 2002 are Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, and Spider-Man. This movie was beaten by Crossroads, a Britney Spears film, and The Master of Disguise. So just a little taste there of this movie. But yeah, this is an interesting, a really interesting, weird movie because it is trying so hard to be so many things. And like I said, we've talked about these movies, Color of Night. There's a movie that I saw with Kim Basinger in a tower, like a psychological erotic thriller, and 9.5 weeks. And it feels like it's neither erotic or a thriller. It feels like it's trying to do both. And like you said, Jason, it just stops in the middle from being one and switches to the other. And I feel like that.
And the movie that it turns into in the second half informs the first half very differently.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it makes it seem as though the first half is him, frankly, grooming someone to be murdered.
It's like, you know, it's,
and
like,
that's not how you feel in the first half.
No,
that's not what it seems like is happening.
Like, it feels to me like he's going to keep on pushing her to do these things that are out of her comfort zone, and then it will maybe eventually kill her, or it will, or she's going to have some sort of, like, that seems what it is. Like, she's going out of her comfort zone, but then she just becomes an investigative journalist. It's almost as if they're giving you pieces of a puzzle, and then you find out they're not puzzle pieces at all. It's actually pieces of food, and you have a pizza in front of you. It's like, wait, I thought I was doing a puzzle. Like, I guess I'm eating a pizza? Like, it's so, like, it, I'm so.
Well, it also, like, none of the reveals, you know, like the Natasha McElhone, like, is the murderer reveal you can kind of see coming. But like the incest reveal, you would never in your wildest imagination think that is her motivation.
Well, I thought that Natasha was writing the letters. I didn't know she was the murderer. But what I thought was, and this is my bigger thought, because I'm thinking about, like, what is the kink here? What am I missing? And I'm like, oh, the kink is Natasha and Joseph Fiennes are a couple. And they are not brother and sister, but they act like brother and sister to like kind of bring people into this web and like kind of fuck with them.
Too.
And like I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And but they're the lovers. And then when they like use up somebody, they get rid of them. Like it's almost like they double team someone. And like because I was expecting Natasha to have sex with Heather Graham. I was like,
they kept insinuating that, you know, lingering like touches and glances. Like they kept like suggesting that Natasha McElhone might be trying to seduce Heather Graham.
Right. And she's jealous. Know? And it felt like their game was that. Like to me, that's a more interesting movie. Like because she doesn't know. She's allowed to be like, oh, that she's like, oh yeah, that's my brother. Like, oh, and then you, it would be like, and then you would have like this crazy threesome, or you know, it's like, oh wait, you've fallen victim into this world. But it's not even that interesting. Like that to me, look, and this is why I've been trying to get my erotic thrillers off the ground. June, you refuse to read them, but I'm writing some really great stuff, especially in quarantine. Novelizations, movies, web series, VR, metaverse. I have a lot of great ideas. Erotic thriller people, come get me. I'm ready to go. Like,
oh God.
Come
get me?
Jesus. Would you recommend...
Erotic thriller people, come get me.
Pick me up.
I don't think
Pick
that's
me up.
How they
like, you're about to
how
be
you
like,
get these things to market.
You know, you gotta get it out there in the world. I gotta say it to get it.
You think they're going to like come pick you up here and take you to...
Bring me home, erotic thriller people. Can we... would we recommend this movie? Would you say people should watch this movie?
I would not. I did not enjoy this movie very much. You know, like I thought this movie, like in the realm of erotic thrillers, there's a million other erotic thrillers that I would say watch instead. Body Heat. Watch Jagged Edge. There's a lot of great erotic thrillers.
I did laugh a lot though in this.
Good.
I guess so. That's why I actually do recommend it because I did enjoy it. I did. Yeah. I thought it was utterly insane, but I think it's so absurd and there's so many insane performance choices, I thought, that I just kind of enjoyed it. And I was, you know what, I was honestly really surprised we had never seen it before. I was like, oh, this is so kind of classically terrible.
Yeah.
I couldn't like believe what I was watching. Honestly, just for those two shots alone of people falling off the mountains, I really do think it's worth it. And if you see the beginning, like, just know there's going to be another sequence where we're going to flash back to those people falling off the mountains. And it's going to be even funnier.
Even crazier.
The second time.
I will say that the dialogue in this movie will make you laugh. Yeah. Multiple times, I think that there are some reaction shots of being scared and happy that are incredibly comical. I think that Joseph Fiennes is trying to be scary at points, but looks straight up goofy.
Heather Graham is trying to be scared at points and looks straight up goofy. Like,
this leads into my question. Would this movie have worked better if it was Ralph Fiennes and Naomi Watts?
Yes.
I mean, Jason, yes.
Right?
It is so hard between, you know, her big eyes and his big sweaters to take anything seriously.
The movie is constantly telling us that they have this electric chemistry and this connection that cannot be denied. And I don't think that's on display in the film. The film is just telling us that. It's not showing us that. And that is what makes this film, I think, quite hard to get access to and why it seems often silly. You know,
it does seem silly and
absurd that people are behaving the way they're behaving because I'm just not buying it. Really,
it has a bit of like fan fiction esque like plotting to it because it is so naive and so open. And I've seen 50 Shades of Grey. I also think there's some very laughable moments in there as well. And I think it's hard because I think they want to show the sexual awakening. And I think the only way to kind of do that is to like virginalize like the female, you know, they'd be like, oh my, oh, oh. But it also like it does make the movie wonky because it makes me feel uncomfortable. There are moments in this movie that I was like, like I actually preferred them closed.
It's a lot of secondhand embarrassment.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's a moment where after they've just fucked again, they're fully clothed, laying down on the ground, almost like, I feel like it felt like a Peanuts cartoon or something like that. I'm like, then I also feel weird. It's like, I just don't know. Like, I don't even.
Wait, it reminded you of a Peanuts cartoon?
I don't know why. I was like, what does this remind me of? Because it was like the two of them laying on the ground, like looking up in the sky.
Like Linus and Lucy, like lying on the floor?
Like, that's what it looked like to me. And I was like, what's going on here? Why are they so fully clothed? Like, I was like, did they only agree to one nudity scene? And then I said to June, I was like, I bet you it was like, we're going to do it once and then we're never going to go back to it. And June's like,
well, now that you said it took 7 days, I'm like, that's why they're not. I feel like, yeah, That's too much.
Too much.
You know, like
the
rest of it.
Well, it happened too quickly. Like to me, that's just a plotting, you know, failure where we should have been wanting to see these two have sex for a long time. And that's just like, it's just such a, you know, and listen, that's the problem is that I was uncomfortable when they had their clothes off. I was uncomfortable when they had their clothes on. Like nothing.
I was uncomfortable
felt
in that kimono
good.
And those sweaters.
Nothing, they
no
didn't
clothing
seem
fit.
They didn't seem to have a genuine connection at all.
And,
you know what I mean?
And
like to each other, i.e. getting married. Because they get married. Like they get married like
and
within
seemingly
days
no one
of
from
meeting.
Her side is there. I'll ask you this question, and I'm sorry if I don't think I zoned out in this podcast because I'm here and I'm attentive. Do we determine what's in that closet with the padlock besides a couple of letters?
Oh, it's got like climbing equipment in it.
So
it just looks like I think my
so it's
assumption
like a locker?
Was
like I mean he's like that nervous.
Yeah, my assumption was it was like the love letters was what he was like.
But seemingly, I guess that locker.
But
looked like it was there for a long time. It looked
I also thought it was going to be a 50 Shades of Grey style, like you know, sex toy closet or something like that. But no, it seems to be like personal artifacts that are private.
And,
I don't know.
And to me, it's like those.
Why
you
lock
need
it up?
You
I think
need a
it's
whole
honestly.
Closet?
I think it's there just to have a locked closet.
I mean,
honestly,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's just
like,
that.
Well, because like the idea
it's
is
again
like,
just to cast more suspicion on him.
Right? Because,
why would he need this?
Because
why
you could hide
this?
Letters. Anywhere.
Yeah.
Like totally. Letters are not a tricky thing to hide. It's like, oh, this big thing, you know, and it's also like, what's so wrong about it? Like when he does throw the letters at her, I was like, ah, you found them. It's like, well, yeah. I mean, like I don't know. I mean, like, look,
again, I think it's really just manipulating us to think.
Right. The movie is about
worse,
tricking
to
us.
To think worse of him.
Right.
Yeah. The movie is manipulating us to think worse of him. And so that we buy into the fact that she is in mortal danger.
And traditionally,
and the reality
like
is she has just married an asshole, not a murderer.
And traditionally,
she's married a psychopath,
not a
murderer.
Movies like this are supposed to let us, like, because even that movie that we did with Chaz Palminteri, like, we did that a little while ago, about a year ago. Like, that one, like.
Nope. I don't think so.
Remember with Chaz Palminteri?
No, I'm just. I don't remember any movies.
That one.
Wait, which one?
With Linda Fiorentino, Jade.
Oh yes,
right. That was
Joe Esterhaus movie.
Yes,
yes,
yeah,
yes,
was,
yes.
Like,
thank you.
Like it's one. I think even when done, like that movie was whatever. But at the end, you look back and go, "Oh, now I see the connection." But this movie was tricking you along the way. Like it is.
Correct.
Like it's not like The Sixth Sense where you're like, "I see it now." It's like, no. I'm as the director and writer, I'm saying. Fuck you. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, it's, yeah, none of it makes sense. Like, when you
and
have.
And it's not
the,
a puzzle you could have put together because you could never have guessed incest, jealousy, psychotic anger and behavior. Like basically, those two, Natasha McElhone and Joseph Fiennes, rather, are so fucked up as individuals that they are just wreaking havoc in the lives of everybody they come in touch with. You know, they are just,
so
they are monsters.
Such monsters. But look, maybe we're just Flatlanders and we don't get it. Jason, June, what do you want to tell people about?
You know what? I'm going to say, you know, if you are liking this show, this episode, this movie, you know, very funny, but like also kind of like a grind. I'm going to just say, recommend this show to your friends by sending them the Voyage of the Rock Aliens episode. Mm. Like, I need more people to watch
people
Voyage
want
of the Rock
us to
Aliens.
Do it again. People are like, I hope you are being honest in saying that you would do it again.
Since we did it, I have not stopped telling people to watch it. Mm-hmm. I've not stopped talking about it. And so I want to tell people, send that episode and that movie to people that don't listen to the podcast or don't, or just send the movie to people, irrelevant of the podcast. Expose people to one of the true joys of the last few months of my life,
which was
the movie Voyage of the Rock Aliens.
I mean, I think we may have to do it again. I don't know. Maybe we do that as a live show.
It would be fun.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I've already forgotten it. So I actually, and it was definitely with me when I saw it, and I know it's important, but,
you're the one who said
it again.
You were the one who spearheaded we needed to do it again.
As I think about it, it's a lot of it's coming back to me, and I do know it was important. Ugh. I do know it was important. Yeah, that's it.
All right. I love it. A big thank you to our super producer, Cody Fisher, our engineer, Devin Bryant, our movie producer, who picks all these great films, and that is Avril Halley. She sits through all these films all the time. Our researcher, Nate Kiley, our producer, Molly Reynolds, and our publisher, July Diaz. A huge shout out to all the amazing art that we get from the ghost of Craig T. Nelson on Instagram. That is Zach McAleese. And of course, Nate Kiley. You can see all of that on all of our socials, and we are just at HDTGM. And if you are following that weird HDTGM account, which is like underscore HDTGM on Instagram, stop. That's not us. We've tried to get it back, but we haven't. And if you want to wear any of the merch from the show, we normally have a shirt or sticker or something from every episode, and that is up at tpublic.com. Just search for How Did This Get Made? And you will find our store right there with reasonable prices all the time. Well, I want to make sure that I tell people to check in next week, because in between each of our big episodes, we have a different episode where we hear from you. You can tell us what you liked about the movie, what you didn't like about the movie, maybe things that we got wrong about the film. Give us a call at 619-PAULASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. You can also leave your comment on our Discord at discord.gg/HDTGM. And you know what? We're also going to be there to answer your questions. That's right. If you have problems in your life, I try to take on your problems and give you an answer, an unbiased opinion. And Cody helps me, and so does Devin sometimes. So you can also ask that on our Paul helpline. Plus, Jason will be there, and we'll be talking about what we're watching in quarantine. So much is happening in those episodes. So make sure you tune in and give us a call at 619-PAULASK. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.